Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
This is Brian Lehrer's Daily Politics Podcast from WNYC Studios. It's Monday, August 23rd. I'm Nancy Solomon filling in for Brian today. The crisis in Afghanistan continues to grab dramatic headlines. And as you might expect, the Sunday morning news shows were filled with a defense by Biden administration officials who insist they haven't made a huge mistake and that the U.S. military is running a successful evacuation. Republicans have gone on the attack. On Face the Nation, the former ambassador to Afghanistan under President Obama offered a take that neither defended nor completely blamed the president. Ryan Crocker says the pullout has been nothing short of catastrophic.
President Biden didn't create this whole scenario. President Trump did by engaging the Taliban in talks without the Afghan government in the room. That began a process of delegitimization of the state and its security forces. That was a huge contributing factor to where we are now. I mean, that said, President Biden owns it. He's taken ownership of the policy. He has taken ownership of the envoy who negotiated this thing. So lots of blame to go around here.
Crocker says this isn't just a humanitarian crisis, but the swift victory of the Taliban will now embolden extremists across the region.
It has created a global crisis, quite frankly. It has emboldened violent Islamic radicals. And I think we're all going to see the fallout of that, certainly in Pakistan. They championed the Taliban because they felt they had no choice. Well, the Taliban victory, the narrative of defeating the great infidel, empowers radicals in Pakistan.
Joining us now to talk Afghanistan and the fight in Washington over infrastructure spending and the federal budget is Susan Page, USA Today Washington bureau chief and the author of Madam Speaker, Nancy Pelosi and the Lessons of Power. Hey, Susan, thanks so much for joining us.
Hey, Nancy, it's great to be with you on this very newsy Monday morning.
I'll say. So catch us up from what the president had to say about Afghanistan over the weekend and what the response has been so far.
Well, the president spoke to the nation on Friday about Afghanistan, and then he and his officials spent the rest of the weekend correcting and explaining what he said. He's been a very sure-footed president up to this point, but with this Afghanistan withdrawal, we've seen little of that sure-footedness. On the Friday address to Americans and taking some questions, he said several things that were simply not true. He said Al-Qaeda is no longer present in Afghanistan. He said our allies have not questioned our credibility in the wake of this catastrophic withdrawal. He said that Americans were not having trouble with the Taliban and getting to the airport in Kabul, the Americans there who want to evacuate. All those things were not accurate. And so this has been really an issue that has created some serious credibility problems for the president that the White House is continuing to have to deal with.
How do you account for that misstep? I mean, just in terms of communicating and transparency, I mean, he seems to be adding to his problems rather than helping himself. So why do you think that is?
Yes. Part of Biden's selling point to Americans during the campaign was he was experienced and steady, that he was competent and empathetic, that he'd be a contrast to what we saw with President Trump's administration. And there have been a lot of issues on which that has been true. But, you know, on the issue of Afghanistan, Joe Biden has for a long time opposed the expansion of the U.S. mission in Afghanistan. He was a lonely voice during the Obama administration arguing against trying to continue to do nation building there. And now as president, he is, in his view, delivering on a promise he made a long time ago, following through on his views that the United States should not have any forces there, that this was a mission that was guaranteed to fail. The problem is Americans don't necessarily disagree with the idea that we should be out of Afghanistan. That's a popular position. But Americans are, I think, distressed when they see the chaos at the airport, the human cost, including to Afghans who served with us during this long war, and the plight ahead for women and girls in Afghanistan. So it's not the basic decision to withdraw. It's the ineptitude in handling that withdrawal.
Now, the roots of this crisis go back to the Trump administration's negotiations with the Taliban that left out the Afghanistan government. You know, the analysis has been that that signaled to the army that they were being abandoned by the U.S., and that's what led to the collapse 2 weeks ago. How might have Biden dealt with this hand of cards that he inherited from Trump differently?
So, of course, that's true. And every president decries the mess that the previous president left for him to deal with. Although on this issue, you know, President Trump and President Biden had the same view, same fundamental view, that it was time for this war of 20 years to end. With the benefit of a little bit of hindsight, we don't have a lot of hindsight now, and there's going to be a lot of examination of what went wrong in these last few weeks. But with the benefit of a little bit of hindsight, the idea set that President Biden set an August 31st, September 11th, and then an August 31st deadline withdrawal, lots of questions about that. And just yesterday, the president said that might be extended, although the Taliban have said they will not, that they have pushed back against the idea that they are willing to see American forces there past that August 31st deadline. Clearly, we should have begun evacuation efforts earlier and with more vigor than we did. Because there is, I think, whatever your views on the war in Afghanistan and whether it was worth it, there is an almost united American view that we have an obligation to those who served us as translators and in other other roles during this war. And we see this this mob at the Kabul airport and worry about the cost that those people are going to be paying.
The response in the Sunday news shows from the Biden administration yesterday to this particular criticism of not getting enough people out before they pulled out the military. You know, the administration officials, including Jake Sullivan, made the case that they got a lot of people out and that they couldn't have foreseen just how swiftly the Taliban, and, you know, we've heard this a lot over the last couple of weeks, how swiftly the Taliban would take control. It's hard. It's kind of hard to believe that, though, right? Because, I mean, how do they not have CIA intelligence telling them, you know, what the Taliban is up to in the weeks before this happens, and the fact that they're sweeping through and getting meeting with tribal leaders and forcing people involved in the military to commit to laying down their arms and melting away, as what then transpired. So, I mean, what has there been any analysis of, like, what why this misstep occurred?
Well, it was either a failure of intelligence or a failure to heed intelligence. And those are two different things. The president and some of his top aides have said it was a surprise that Afghanistan basically fell in 11 days. And that is a kind of speedy collapse that is catastrophic and surely surprising. But the idea that we didn't have much time, I mean, that just fits the common sense test of what was going to happen in Afghanistan once U.S. forces withdrew. And one of the tough questions that Anthony Blinken, the Secretary of State, had to face yesterday in the appearance he did on Fox News Sunday was his handling of a memo through what they call the dissent channel from some U.S. diplomats in the region warning that they were sitting on the edge of a catastrophe. And Secretary Blinken acknowledged that he had seen that memo and responded to it in this these internal State Department channels, but it took a while for the U.S. policy to catch up with that warning.
So you mentioned the Sunday shows. Republicans were having a field day yesterday with these missteps. On Face the Nation, Nikki Haley defended the deal Trump made with the Taliban, but then blamed Biden for pulling out. Some Republicans have accused Biden of negotiating with terrorists because the State Department is communicating with the Taliban about evacuation efforts in Kabul. But Nikki Haley took a different tack.
They're not negotiating with the Taliban. They've completely surrendered to the Taliban. They surrendered Bagram Air Force Base, which was a major NATO hub. They surrendered $85 billion worth of equipment and weapons that we should have gotten out of there. They have surrendered the American people and actually withdrew our troops before they withdrew the American people. And they've abandoned our Afghan allies who kept people like my husband safe while they were overseas deploying. So, no, there was no negotiating. This was a complete and total surrender and an embarrassing failure.
So what do you think, Susan? Is that a fair criticism?
Well, let's remember that Nikki Haley was UN ambassador for President Trump. It was President Trump who not only negotiated with the Taliban, but was prepared to invite Taliban leaders to Camp David, a huge global prize to get an invitation like that, and not have the Taliban government along for those negotiations. Now, that ended up not happening, but not because President Trump didn't want it to happen. So, you know, one of the things that I think drives Americans crazy about politics is when they see positions taken, when they see people, politicians flip positions based on who's making the argument. So even Republicans who defended President Trump's willingness to negotiate with the Taliban now criticize President Biden's attempts to do the same. And Democrats do this too, but at the moment, it's Republicans who often seem to have very short memories about the positions they were taking a year ago.
Okay, the calls are coming in. We're going to go to Daniel in West Point. Hi, Daniel. You're on the air with Susan to talk Afghanistan.
Hi, good morning. You know, as I listen to your conversation, I take your guest's point about putting dates on this being incredibly difficult, and maybe it's a frustrating enterprise to try to get this done within a time frame. But setting goals, I think, is reasonable for the president to do. Maybe he should describe them as goals. But as long as the priority is to do the right thing, which is to take our allies and our partners and our U.S. citizens out of that country, moving that date doesn't frustrate me. What would frustrate me is if we abandon that goal because of some artificial timeline. So if the timeline continues to change, as long as we are actively pursuing that goal, I'm all right with that. I just do not want our priorities to change and for us to actually abandon the people that we're supposed to care about.
Susan?
You know, Daniel, that's a great point, and I think a lot of Americans would agree with you on that. The question is, will the Taliban agree with you? And after August 31st, will they make the argument that the U.S. no longer has the standing to keep forces there? I mean, I think that may end up being one of the pushes and pulls we see there. You know, you worry about, you both respect deadlines. I mean, deadlines sometimes force action. They make you, I have a deadline on a story I'm writing. It makes me finish it in time. So deadlines can have a goal. In this case, President Biden very much wanted to be able to celebrate the 20th anniversary of the 9/11 attacks by saying our mission was done in Afghanistan and we had finally pulled out of America's longest war. But the setting of a deadline in this case has really created such incredible difficulties and will color it's not a celebration of that 20th anniversary, but our analysis of where we stand after 20 years.
Politico recently reported that White House advisor Neera Tanden says Afghanistan is not currently their main focus at the White House and that the number one priority for the cabinet is getting the infrastructure bill and the budget passed. To what extent is Afghanistan affecting Biden's domestic agenda, do you think?
Well, there is this separate track, this issue of getting through both the $1 trillion hard infrastructure bill that's passed the Senate and also this big budget reconciliation bill, $3.5 trillion, that has kind of the guts of Biden's domestic agenda. We're going to see some key tests for that in the House today and tomorrow, because at the moment there's a dispute not between Republicans and Democrats. It's between moderate right. Democrats and progressive Democrats over which comes first. And it is at this moment, it is hard to see the path to victory for the White House and Democrats on this. Although I do have to say that after writing a book about Nancy Pelosi, I never count her out and her ability to pull a rabbit out of a hat.
Well, let's dig into that a little bit because, you know, we have a local angle to that fight going on among Democrats because Bergen County Congressman Josh Gottheimer is leading this small group of Democrats who say they won't vote for the budget unless they can vote for the infrastructure bill first.
Right.
And progressive activists have actually been protesting at Gottheimer's office, trying to stop him. So what's at play here? Why do these, I think, you know, the Problem Solvers Caucus are usually called moderate Democrats. So they're sort of in the middle there. Some of them are pretty conservative. What's driving this?
So, yes, Congressman Gottheimer has definitely gotten everyone's attention here. And you said it's a small group. It is a small group. It's just 9 members of Congress. But, you know, Pelosi can only lose 3 Democrats and still get something through this sharply divided, closely divided House. So 9 turns out to be a big number at this particular moment in time. And the one thing that's has surprised people some is that these 9 moderates led by, you know, Congressman from your vicinity have not backed down. Pelosi has unfurled a lot of pressure on them to get in line with her plan, which is to pass the budget reconciliation bill first and delay that bipartisan infrastructure bill. But they have doubled down on another op-ed today. Saying that they won't bend. And that is something we're all watching here, because if nobody bends, it won't get through.
And what are the stakes here? I mean, I think when we talk infrastructure bills and the federal budget, people's eyes kind of glaze over. You know, is there a way to kind of sharpen people's attention on this and to give us the stakes?
Well, let's talk about the budget reconciliation bill, which is, I think, the most ambitious set of legislative proposals in the domestic front that we've seen at least since the Great Society in the 60s, and maybe since the New Deal with FDR. This is history-making legislation that would extend to pre-kindergarten federal aid for kids, for young kids to go into pre-kindergarten, and extend federal support on the other end, into community colleges. It would expand Medicare benefits for seniors. It includes extension of broadband access to rural areas. It would significantly expand the federal safety net for Americans, but only if it's passed. And Democrats don't have the luxury of waiting till, like, let's wait till next year and we'll pass this, because this is, I think, with their very narrow majorities, their very narrow majority in the House, and the fact that they're dealing with a 50-50 Senate, they're either going to do this now or it is not going to get done. This is Biden's agenda, the Democrats' agenda. It's on the line, and this may be the week in which we find out if they will hang together in a way that lets it get through.
But it'll also be very interesting for those of us who, you know, live and breathe politics in our region here. It'll be really interesting to see what the impact is on Josh Gottheimer if he is able to really torpedo all of this. I mean, it could, if it drags the whole thing down, it'll be interesting to see to what extent they hold him, people locally hold him responsible.
You know, Nancy, that's exactly the point that your name twin, Nancy Pelosi, is making to them. That if you bring this down, you're going to call yourself a Democrat. There are some indications, some implicit threats that they might lose funding for their campaigns. The pressure on this is going to be pretty enormous. And so what that tells you is that they surely will work it out because the stakes are so high. But, you know, until they work it out, it's not worked out.
We're going to have to leave it there. We've been talking with Susan Page, Washington Bureau Chief for USA Today, and author of Madam Speaker, Nancy Pelosi and the Lessons of Power, which came out earlier this year. Susan, thanks so much.
Nancy, thank you.
Brian Lehrer, a daily politics podcast, is an excerpt from my live daily radio show, The Brian Lehrer Show, on WNYC Radio, 10 a.m. to noon Eastern Time, if you want to listen live at wnyc.org. Thanks for listening today. Talk to you next time.